That's in the air, this could be out. Jarvan's underneath it, will he catch it? He's got good hands, he's got him, yes he has. Jarvan's got him in the deep. Having fumbled all night, he's taken the big one.
Hello and welcome to Couch Talk. The guest today is former Indian cricketer Sanjay Bangar, who is currently the Indian side's batting coach and also the head coach of IPL franchise Kings XI Punjab. He talks about the responsibilities of a batting coach, how batting plans are set, how he helps players going through back patches, and the influence of Tendulkar and Dravid on his coaching philosophies, amongst other things. Welcome to the show, Sanjay.
Thank you, Subhash.
It's absolutely my pleasure having you on. You've been the batting coach with the Indian team for a while now, so let's get started there. What are the responsibilities of a batting coach? And in your case, what is the extent of your duties with the Indian team?
Well, the extent of my role is obviously to look after the preparation part of the batting group. And that necessarily doesn't mean that only the batsman, but also looking after the batting of the lower order as well. So in that case, it's basically related to the preparation, understanding the needs of the players, understanding where they stand with their game, what form they are in. What are they working on from the technical point of view? So I think my role includes all these things.
Okay. Let's talk about the various aspects of the things that you just mentioned. In terms of batting plans with respect to players and as a batting unit, how do you develop those batting plans? For example, you know, we can talk about, say, in preparation for a test series played at home or abroad, and limited overs tournament. You can start wherever you'd like.
See, nowadays international cricket is so cramped. Basically, you're playing one format over the another format. So you do not actually get a lot of time wherein you know there is a period of inactivity before the start of a test series, and then you go into a test series. So those sort of things are no longer present in international cricket. So you need to alter your plans and modify the preparation slightly. So generally when we do the test, when we approach the test format, what we are looking at is basically the composition that the team is playing, and like in the last couple of series, we played with this combination of six Indian batsmen, six batsmen, and five specialist bowlers. Now, with that, earlier all the Indian teams have played with six specialist batsmen, wicketkeeper, and four bowlers. So
correct.
This was just so it was the management's call to go back for this composition, and therein we stressed a lot on guys who need to take more responsibilities as far as the batting department was concerned. And that meant, you know, every individual player realizing that if they have to, if they get a start, they have to make it count. But apart from that, it's our preparation, apart from that, is also based a lot on the opposition and the conditions that we play in. When we go to Australia, we make a conscious effort to play the bouncing ball. For that, we use various synthetic balls for the batsman to get used to. On turning wickets, I mean, we prepare a lot about certain factors of batsmanship which are required. That is basically trusting your defense, number one. And number two would be, you know, using your feet to get to the pitch of the ball. And number three, using of the sweep shot. So, and number four, also developing a back foot play against the spinner. So those are the things that we look at purely from preparation point of view, and that again is determined by the conditions and the opposition that we play.
It's an interesting thing that you said about the team composition, you know, 5 plus, you know, 6 plus 5, 6 plus 1 plus 4. And so when you go in with like essentially one less batsman, that means that, as you said, you know, somebody gets in, they have to make it count. But although on the same, by the same token, does that mean that the players, because you only have 6 batsmen, including the wicketkeeper, that you have to be a lot more defensive and get yourself a chance, whereas opposed to when you have an extra batsman, then you have more liberty to attack the bowling? Is that sort of thing talked about? Am I on the right track?
No, not entirely. What the thought behind it is basically the lower order has to contribute. The lower order also has to fill in for that role of chipping in with those runs, and that is what we saw. We saw in the Sri Lanka series wherein the lower order did so well, like Ashwin and Amit Mishra contributing with the bat lower down the order. So it also gives the all-rounders or the bowling all-rounders that onus to take up the responsibility of getting some extra runs. And the thought behind it is that, say, if you're playing with six batsmen in, and a wicketkeeper is also a batsman, and then four bowlers, what happens is that at most times you will end up on a good day, you'll end up getting those extra 50, 75 runs. But because you're only having four bowlers and in conditions which are favoring of batsmen, then the bowlers will have to work extra hard, so they might end up conceding more than 50 to 75 runs in getting those 10 wickets. So it is basically, okay, we are going to get 50 less runs, but it also, like, sort of by having those five specialist bowlers, you also in a way suggesting that we will get the opposition out within that sort of a within that sort of a score in the first innings. And if at all, if you compare it with the second innings, maybe what happens is that instead of probably chasing 250, if your bowling is good, you can either be you can end up chasing 200, or you can end up defending 200 rather than, you know, defending 275 or getting to 275. So that has been the thought.
Okay. You know, you hear a lot about bowling plans, because cricket by nature, you know, bowling is the creative side of it, where the action starts and batsmen are actually reacting to what is being delivered to them. So there are bowling plans, and, you know, when it's a limited overs game, they talk about opening an over, finishing the over, dot ball percentage, all that stuff. So, but I'm assuming there have to be batting plans as well. How to bat together in partnerships, and as you said, top order, middle order, and the low order, and how they must chip in, etc. So, how do you set up a batting plan for a side, and how do you give the responsibilities to the various players within the lineup?
No, so, I mean, basically, you're talking of limited overs cricket, or
I mean, you can start whichever you feel like answering first. We can start with test matches. That's because that's more variables there. So perhaps we can start there.
Test cricket, I don't think test cricket there is one specific plan. I feel the more dynamic planning is related to the shortest format of the game, and that is where you talk of, you know, how you can minimize dots, how you can target a particular bowler, at what phase of the game you want to look to accelerate, at what are the targets that you are looking at, say a 6 over or a 10 over or a 13 over mark. What sort of a then you look at the opposition plans, wherein you probably look at their patterns of which bowlers are bowling at what stages for them. And in turn, it generally also helps the batsman in knowing or in anticipating that there are certain bowlers who which every batsman is sort of comfortable against, and that is where you have it in your mind that okay, if at this phase if I walk in and if this particular bowler is bowling, then you know I have the confidence to take him on, and that is something that every batsman tends to do in the shortest format of the game. But going to 50 over cricket, even in 50 over cricket, you say that you know there are constant rule changes.
Mm-hmm.
But in 50 over cricket, you generally feel that you know earlier times, probably our team was one of the best, had the highest scoring rate in the last 10 overs.
Yeah.
Those are also times wherein you know that only four fielders were allowed outside the circle.
Yeah.
So there was a rule change necessarily some time back. So that meant that we will have to work out a good sort of a run rate between the 30th and the 40th over, because you're not going to end up scoring a lot of runs after the 40th over because of that extra fielder outside the circle. So, you know, that was a pattern to it. We just, so there were certain blocks wherein between the 30th and the 40th over, we didn't really perform well in the South Africa series. So, we reworked that and set it in different way that how we can look at things and how we can approach the game. So it's also related to the rule changes, and you need to be constantly working on those sort of things.
So in limited overs, it seems there is a lot more planning, a lot more strategy, whereas you know, where you're doing one-on-one sort of thing, you know, which bowler, which batsman, what situation of the inning, so on and so forth. So whereas in a test match, what sort of, is there much planning or is it more technical aspect of thing that you focus on?
Yeah, I mean, test match, again, you have time on your side and you don't rush into things, so you don't plan as much as you do in the 50 or other T20 cricket, because basically it's occupation of the crease and playing sessions and making sure that you're batting at a particular run rate, so you don't really want to fall behind or you don't want to be slow. But again, there the one aspect that we definitely work on is strike rotation. And a lot of communication between the partners. So if at all in test cricket, we need emphasis is given on communication between the partners or between the batsmen as far as batting is concerned, as also making sure that the contributions of the lower order. So in our, we have devoting the similar amount of time on the lower order batsman as much as we spend time on the top order batsman as far as honing their skills are concerned. And I believe that there has been some improvement in that aspect.
Yeah, certainly. You mentioned earlier about how, you know, these days you don't have much time. You go from one format to another, you know, you play in a world tournament, you play IPL, and then there comes another tour or a test series, you play a few tests, so on and so forth. So there is not really much downtime to work on certain aspects of your batting or just take a break from things. So in such situations, you know, let's say you're on a 4-test series or 5-test series like last year in 2 years ago in England. If there is a batsman that is going through a rough patch, you know, is having some technical issues perhaps or confidence issues, whatever it may be, how do you approach that situation as the batting coach?
Basically, you want to have a very, first of all, the players that you work with need to have trust in you and need to have faith in you. So, it does take time, and it does take time for any individual who's new to a job, but now I'm close to 2 years in the job, so obviously, the trust factor has developed really well between me and the players.
Mm-hmm.
And happens is that when there is loss of form or it's just going back to basics, trying and understanding what was the ideal performance state of a player, when he was doing well, what sort of a routines he had when he was doing well. Again, and whether he's watching the ball out of his hand, whether he's thinking of other things when he's going out to bat, as in which are controllable, so which are not controllable. So basically, all these things you get to know by interacting with the players one on one and away from the glare of the public. So I feel it's basically boils down to the rapport that you have, and if you have a good enough rapport and the player trusts you, I think it becomes a bit easier to pass on your inputs to their game, as well as, you know, their acceptance level of the inputs, and whether those inputs are going to be included by the player in his preparation. So it's a bit of a process. And I believe that process is right, you tend to get that result.
Let's say somebody has some bad habits creep into their batting, say overcompensating or they're overbalancing, etc. And you try to correct that in the middle of a test series. And sometimes you may not get the results right away. So as you said, it's a process. So how do you try to maintain that confidence of the player that what you have suggested and what you have told them to do is the right thing to do, and eventually they will get the results they want?
See, at this level, I mean, nobody expects overnight results, and everybody understands that, okay, you make a change and everything happens, and you know, it's not like that. There are certain habits which are formed over a period of years. Players are comfortable with certain things. And to move away, you need to, the players need to do it with a lot of conviction. And I think the player needs to believe first that whatever input is given to them, whether they are willing to put it into their game, as I said earlier. So it's basically conviction of the player in accepting the inputs which they feel that would help them improve the game. So if they feel that, okay, this is really going to work well for us, well for my game, then you know, it becomes a lot more easier. So for our thing is basically plant the seed and walk away.
I see.
And watch and observe how a player is doing that.
Okay. What I really wanted to know was, you're in the middle of a test series. Let's say, for example, a batsman is having issues outside the off stump and he's edging far too many of them instead of leaving them. How do you technically go about correcting that? And how long of a process is that?
See, for that, you need to understand that you need to study the technique of a player and apply the biomechanical principles that govern the art of batsmanship. So basically, the biomechanical principles suggest that batsmanship is all about stability and balance, which allows you to generate, to play the ball correctly and be in a correct position to execute your shots. So all those principles of whether the batsman is well balanced or not, whether his his alignments are good or not, whether he's picking the bat in the right fashion or not, whether his perception level is good or not, it all starts from the setup phase of a particular batsman. So generally, I think the role of a coach, if he is able to correct most things at the setup and the backlift phase of a particular batsman, like if his setup is good, his feet are, his feet, the the weight is equally distributed on the balls of the feet, taking his initial movements correct, whether he's setting up for a full ball or not, whether he's picking the bat, initiating his, you know, backlift with the top hand. Those sort of a things, if a batsman is doing well, then he can react to the ball better because he's given himself the best chance biomechanically for the body levers to work against. So, from a technical point of view, you continuously keep on studying these factors of a particular batsman. And if a batsman is doing these things right, then there is a lot more chance of him making lesser mistakes and he becoming, you know, a very, very effective effective batsman.
So when you put certain corrective measures in place to you know, change certain things about the stance, balance, pickup, whatever that might be, and how long of a process is it, and you know, do you train over it every net session, or do you give it some time for, you know, you tell them what needs to be done, let them go out and try it both in the match as well as in the nets, and then you go back and verify it? Or, like, I want to know, like, actually how that process carries on.
Basically, we do some certain drills related to a set improvement in to set with a view to improve certain things in a player, and continuously do that. So it's till the point it becomes second nature. So, and then constantly monitor it by using the video footage available. So whether it be movement of the batsman, whether his foot movement, whether his you know, the position of his head in relation to the off stump, and all those things. So it's it basically means you identify an issue which the batsman might be facing, then you sort of talk it through to the player, expect him to accept that, then start doing those corrective measures through a drills, and then constantly remind or constantly making sure that the player is remembering that and is aware of all those things. So I think that is a process. It can work. It can work in a matter of, say, 7 days, but it also depends on how the individual player takes it on board.
So do you, like, let's say if a player has an issue, do you let the player first sort it out himself, and if he cannot allow him to come to you, or do you approach the player as soon as you spot any flaws?
Timing is as much as is required. Especially, you need to pick the right time. If somebody is batting well, and even though you notice certain things, but he's scoring runs, you do not want to, you know, hamper his mindset by putting a doubt in his mind.
I see.
If something is working for him, and it's not causing any sort of a problem, it's only then. Is a pattern of dismissal to a particular batsman, only then you tend to, you know, touch upon certain things, and that too the timing is very, very crucial in when and how and in what sort of a state of a mind you approach the player.
I see. I mean, at the highest level, I mean, everything is such a mental game, because obviously all the players that represent any country, you know, they all have the talent, they have the skills, but I guess the mental aspect becomes the most dominant thing when you combine the fact that, you know, you're almost all the time you're away from home, on tour, whatever. So do you approach your coaching philosophy from that point of view?
Again, I mean, it's basically you forge strong relationships, you forge strong friendships, and it's so you do it at a subconscious level wherein, you know, the player relies on you and trusts you. I think it is basically sort of a relationship that is developed over a period of time. It doesn't happen overnight. because we are constantly traveling, and the amount of time also which we spend off the field together also is equally important for a player-coach relationship to work.
You know, in your playing career, you know, the Indian side that you played in had, you know, as they say, the Fab Four, Fab Five, you know, some of the greatest batsmen to ever play for India, including Sachin Tendulkar, Rahul Dravid, and then, you know, Sehwag and who not, Ganguly, Lakshman, etc. You know, were there things when you were playing with them in the Indian side that you picked on how they went about their batting routines and how they prepared for certain bowlers or made changes to the technique that you absorbed as a player and you use now as a coach?
I felt between then and now, the preparations have only gone better because the cream of the batsman that you mentioned prepared, and the way the current set of cricketers prepare, I feel that the preparation part, because of the additional resources that the team has around itself, has gone up, and I would like to say that the quality of preparation has only gone up because of the additional resources that we have. But having said that, the earlier generation were as meticulous about their preparation as the current generation is. And that is one thing which the Indian cricket is always blessed with, is that you have certain individuals who are totally dedicated to excellence, if that's the right word. And I think that legacy of the past generation has been taken ahead by the current generation as well, who take a lot of pride in wearing that India cap.
On a more technical level, you know, batting technique level, are there things in terms of routines of these batsmen like Sachin and Rahul that you have observed that you think needs to be passed on to the future generations?
See, again, it boils down to preparation, like how Rahul Dravid used to prepare, because I've seen him at close quarters, how he used to prepare at the NCA before the start of the series, or how Sachin prepared for a Shane Warne, which is now part of the FOCO. So basically, every player, when in present day generation, you can name certain individuals who make every effort to be best prepared before the onset of a tour. So all our batsmen, maybe it's Shikhar Dhawan, Murali Vijay, Rohit Sharma, Ajinkya Rahane, or Virat Kohli, or Cheteshwar Pujara, I think their preparation is as much intense as the preparation of the earlier generation, wherein they come really well and well prepared to meet to the challenges of the people. Like it could be playing with a wet tennis ball, playing with a synthetic ball, playing with on surfaces which are dry, which are loose, where the ball is bouncing, where the ball is gripping, where the ball is turning. So those. And then again, whether they can play with soft hands at the start of the innings. So those are the things that generally players do.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you're also head coach of Kings XI Punjab. You know, how does that change your role? I mean, do you still take an active role in looking at the batting of their team, or you leave it to others and you just look at the overall running of the franchise, of the players?
So, yeah, IPL job is a totally different job. It is, from my perspective, being the head coach of an IPL team, basically not really working far too much on the techniques of the player, but it is basically laying down plans. It's a managerial sort of a role wherein you're concerned with the selection, you're concerned with the administration of the team, you're concerned with, you know, dealing with different stakeholders around the team, whether it could be sponsors, it could be the owners. And it's such a cramped schedule. So basically, you set up a plan, you again do your preparations right.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that being a coach of an IPL team is far, far more complex than looking after a particular department of a national team.
I see. All right. Finally, last question. Batting coach of a national side and then an IPL head coach as well. I mean, basically, you are on the job 365 days of the year. How much of an effect does it have on your personal life? And how long do you think you can handle this? Somebody like Gary Kirsten did it for 4 years and then he did for a year or two in IPL, and there's always this constant coaching turnovers. So do you have future plans?
I do not have, not have plans for the future, but again, it's basically, I will be occupied. I have a job till the 30th of May, so till the end of IPL, and our contract with the BCCI has ended on 31st of March. We'll have to wait and see what happens and what transpires after that particular period. But again, to take up a job like this, your family has to be very, very supportive of you, and which I'm very fortunate that I have a very supporting family and a good support system at home who can take care of things. And again, it also becomes a lot easier nowadays with technology, because you can still be away but still be in touch with the family. So I feel it's a tremendous honor, and for this and for having such an honor, you need to sacrifice certain things, which I have been able to do. And I hope to continue to do it in the future as well.
On that note, Sanjay, thank you so much for being on the show. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you again. Thank you.
It's in the air. This could be out. Jarvis underneath it. Will he catch it? He's got good hands. He's got it. Yes, he has.